I met my best friend Anne in 1985.
And the Babysitter's Club kept her friendship alive.
Then Emily was born in 1988, and she said,
"Thanks, Aunt Esme, these books are great.
Now we're all grown up and we're living our dreams
as a writer
and a scholar
and an expert on teens.
And we're gonna start again from the very first book
because we're stuck
in Stony Brook."
Welcome to Stuck in Stony Brook, a podcast about the Babysitter's Club. Today we're discussing book 75, Jessie's Horrible Prank.
Is it horrible?
It's not a prank.
Show. School-sanctioned performance.
Yeah, that happens every year where all the teachers get imitated. I know. I'm with Anne. There's a lot I don't get in this book.
Yeah. It's named poorly, and the tagline on it, "Some jokes aren't funny," is also named poorly, because I do not think either of those is the take-home message from this book.
Should it be called?
I don't know. There was a bad teacher. There once was a bad teacher at SMS.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really follow the naming conventions. Jesse and the guy who shouldn't be in education.
Uh-huh. Jesse and the guy who's just teaching while he waits to apply to grad school.
Right. Real. Very real. All right. Do you guys have your one sentence summaries?
Yeah, I mean, mine's pretty much the title that you suggested.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Jesse takes personal responsibility for a bad teacher's bad teaching.
Okay, I went a slightly different direction, which is I wrote, Jesse finally tells jokes and everyone laughs.
That is true.
Mine is, why are 11-year-olds putting on a variety show about making fun of their teachers?
You just like the whole premise that they would even be doing this show, you don't believe?
That's a little weird. Maybe that's a psychology question for Esme later, but yeah. I feel like...
I can speak to that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you guys, we should probably back up and tell you about the members of this podcast. I'm Anna Chikawa, a freelance writer. I'm a mischievous pragmatist with the sweet tooth.
I'm Esme Schaller, an adolescent psychologist. I'm kind of bossy, but I have a big heart.
And I'm Emily Crandall, a feminist scholar. I'm a total individual, and I like health food.
Nope.
If you want to learn more about us and how we know each other, please check out our prologue episode. Also, rate and review us. It really helps people find the podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or commentary about anything BSC-related, drop us a line at stuckinstonybrook@gmail.com. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/stuckinstonybrook. And we have a new patron to thank today, Joanne from New Zealand. Wow, awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Thanks, Joanne.
Joanne rocks. It's our only Kiwi so far.
I wonder if New Zealand covers are different from like the English and
American. Oh, yeah, that's a great. I would assume they would get the UK covers in New Zealand and Australia, but that's a good question. Joanne, let us know.
But is that a wrong-headed Commonwealth assumption?
It might be a wrong-headed Commonwealth assumption. You know, I don't get how that whole thing works.
Uh-huh. What do we think covers from New Zealand would look like?
Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
I know what answer Han wanted.
Correct. That is the correct answer, Emily.
It's a trick question. The real question is, what does Anne want the covers to be?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good call. I was like, because I was trying to answer it more honestly. I was like, well, I never would have guessed that the UK ones would have that weird brick wall. So why would I, how could I possibly come up with them? But okay, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, it's lots of like outside in rolling green hills. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing.
I knew it.
I wouldn't know what New Zealand looks like from the Lord of the Rings movies because I dissociated and fell asleep during the first one and didn't watch any more of them after that.
Oh, yeah. Esme doesn't like movies.
I especially don't like costume movies with elves and things. That's my least favorite kind of movie.
What do you have against elves?
I mean, we could talk.
What if I was an elf?
What if I was an elf? Well, Anne's like,
Anne.
That's what first of all, Anne.
It's all about me.
It's a fake fight.
It's a fake fight.
Yeah, we can talk about this later if you're going to take my nerd card away because I don't like Lord of the Rings, another fantasy.
Mm.
Because it's about nerds a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. So recap is Jesse has a bad teacher.
Another short takes. We're on
his another short takes
right now. Yeah.
And he's teaching computer programming.
Yes.
Yes. So he has a pocket protector. Uh-huh. He's nerdy. He shouldn't be a teacher.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to care for the children, like really teaching them or disciplining them. And he also Jesse observes him seeming not to care for the other teachers. Also, she interprets it as kind of like standoffishness, but then she wonders if he's just awkward. I was like a little bit worried it was going to go into some weird territory there, but
like what?
Like implying that he's like on the spectrum or something, and that like that's what makes him like bad at disciplining the kids. But I don't think that's not where it ended up going. No. But there were a couple of scenes where Jesse was like, why is he so bad? Or she says the short take that he needs is human relations.
Yes. Yeah, she does say that.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Anyway, so all the students play numerous pranks on him, which honestly, I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
Even though I was just like, that would never. I just can't imagine being in a classroom where that just happened repeatedly over and over again.
Right. As opposed to like one.
Yeah.
And some of them are like the, you know, the whole class things, like I'll drop your books all at once. Like some stuff that would happen in like a Ramona book. Right.
Right.
And some of them are like a very elaborate sort of Rube Goldberg setup to remove his toupee and expose him for the bald man that he is.
Also, what if they had been wrong and that was attached to his hair and it went up on the thing? That would have hurt so bad.
I do remember, Anne, that you and I were pretty obsessed with who had toupees and who didn't in like elementary and middle school. I remember we used to tease our band teacher, Mr. Westfall, and ask if he had a toupee.
But he clearly didn't have a toupee.
Yeah,
that was the joke. Yeah.
But we were really interested in it. I feel like...
Yeah.
Middle school teacher, who was the history teacher with Mrs. Clazy? This is interesting. Anyway, I feel like there is another.
Oh, sorry, that yawn was not directed to you.
Yeah,
I just remember discussing toupees a lot as a late elementary, early middle schooler.
So and probably must have seen it on TV.
Yeah, something.
Yeah,
yeah. But it feels like this tracks for the early 90s and the kids being obsessed with whether or not it's a rug.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that was a joke a lot at that time.
Mm-hmm. And then, let's see. Yeah, so there was that elaborate prank where they had a pole with a fish hook. I mean, I don't know how they pulled that off. But
which they called the balding.
Yeah. Oh, he also speaks like Elmer Fudd a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, geez, this poor guy.
Speech impediment. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, at the same time, there's a sixth grade show going on where they all make fun of the teachers.
The SMS Follies.
Yeah. And there's the look-alike Dolly Parton teachers, which...
So weird.
Is very strange.
There are two of them.
There's two of them. And Jesse is really... Wow, she's out to entertain, set out to entertain in this book. So they all get together, the kids, and they try out for the show, and they have all these skits, and then it turns out that they want Jesse to play Mr. Trout as a Klingon.
Uh-huh. Because Klingons are bald.
Yeah.
And he's a nerd.
Yeah. Anyway, everyone loves it, but then Mr. Trout leaves the school.
Mm-hmm. The state of Connecticut.
He had to leave the state to Vermont.
Which, look, if he lived in California, he would just go from, you know,
LA to
Sacramento or LA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not even that far. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Jesse thinks it's her fault. She feels really guilty. And all the adults assure her it had nothing to do with their cruel behavior to him. She writes him a nice letter apologizing, and he writes her back a note that's like, NBD, I'm good. I'm in grad school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
this, the timeline of this is all very murky. Yeah. And then the B plot is that a bunch of the sitting charges put on the BSC Follies, and they do to the babysitters what the babies, what the sixth graders have done to the teachers.
So it's okay to make fun of people as long as it's like in a weird concept, like a, if we're putting on a show that's about making fun of you, it's okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can talk about this.
Okay.
We want to talk about this. Should I jump into my corner?
Yeah, do it.
Okay. So I want to answer your question first, which I think we've talked about a little bit on the show previously, but the data on teasing is actually pretty interesting, or are actually pretty interesting. And Jesse understands this a little bit once the little kids put on the BSC Follies, right? She's not able to focus on the fact that all of the other teachers at SMS loved the Follies and thought they were hilarious, even though they're making fun of all of them, right? Mm-hmm. She's like over-focused on Mr. Trout and how it was so mean that it made him leave. But somehow she misses the forest for the trees that like all the other teachers thought it was funny. And that really it would have been awful for him to be excluded if everybody else was in it.
But she does have that weird thing, like before she gets his reply, she's like, actually, my apology was disingenuous because I did know that he was going to be different from the rest of the teachers and that he wouldn't appreciate it.
Right. But I think she's still making an assumption there. Like, I think that's 11-year-old logic. Like, she felt weird about it because she didn't actually like him or didn't respect him, I think. Not because she necessarily knew how he would respond.
Mm-hmm.
I think it felt worse because it wasn't out of genuine care. Like, you know, they all have this close relationship with the Dollies, right? So the two Dolly Parton teachers are like the Follies advisors, right? Mm-hmm. They're like the director and stuff. And so they know that the Dollies know that it's well-meaning when they make fun of them, right? But they don't know that about Mr. Trout because nobody really knows Mr. Trout. So I think that's what she's feeling bad about. But I think it speaks to this idea that, you know, imitation in this way means you've been paying attention to somebody and you know a lot about them and you care about them and you care enough to make a joke about them, you know? And there's plenty of, this is about the age when it shifts, that teasing becomes affiliative rather than adversarial. So when younger kids make fun of somebody, it's usually mean. Like, they're usually doing it to, like, separate and identify who's part of their group and who's not part of their group. But starting in middle school, teasing becomes more like, hey, I'm teasing you because I know you. And it's like a more of a call in, like it's a demonstration that we're really friends. Right. And so in that way, it makes sense to me that, you know, making fun of the teachers is part of this sort of community building at Stony Brook Middle School. Right. And then once the sixth graders have done that, they're kind of ready to move on to seventh grade and it evens the playing field a little bit. It's also a time when, you know, kids are identifying who that, you know, it's an early part of identity development. It's a way to sort of test boundaries, which middle schoolers want to do anyway, you know. So I do think it's like a good project for a middle school class to put on something like this. And that teachers who choose to teach middle school and like middle school age kids would be cool with it. And Mr. Mm-hmm. Trout is not one of those people. Right.
Yeah. How did they like follow the other teachers?
Oh, there were lots of examples. So, I mean, the Dollies, they just had like crazy hair and fake boobs.
giant bras. Yeah.
Giant bras, they said. One of them, they imitated Elvis. They had a music teacher who has an operatic voice and she sang all of her lines. They gave a bunch of examples, but everybody had something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't remember all of them because we don't know the teachers prior to this book. Right.
Yeah.
You know,
no,
it's not like we're like, oh, yeah, him, you know.
Right.
But yeah. So I think places do. This is a common thing, like at the end of a summer camp, that campers will do this for the counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is it's a campfire skit kind of tradition and you have to guess who's being who with all that kind of stuff. So, and I think the having the, you know, middle grade kids do the BSC was really smart and funny. Uh-huh. I really liked their imitations of like they had Christy Gale all of her lines. Marianne's just crying the whole time. Uh-huh. Audie's just constantly eating. After snack. Yeah.
I don't know. I still feel like it's mean though. Like not to like to specifically Mr. Trout. Like even though it's within the context of this like make fun of the teachers construct, because it is like, yeah, like he's a bad teacher, but I feel like all these people are in on the joke. So then it's funny. It's like the inside joke, but he's like not in on the joke. So then it's just like making fun of someone.
Well, that it's like the basis of his character is baldness, mm-hmm. which he's obviously trying to hide.
Yeah. But that's like mean, I feel.
Yeah. I also think that this then goes back to what Mr. Kingsbridge, the principal, said, mm-hmm. Of just like, it's better this way. And he's going to be like, I don't think that you can teach middle school if you cannot handle a middle schooler pretending to be a Klingon and being you in a, mm-hmm. in a way. Like, right. I think that that's a very specific job requirement, but you really have to be able to roll with things if you're going to spend your days with middle schoolers. And look, I feel for Mr. Kingsbridge, this short takes thing must be hell to staff. You know what I mean? Like, to find people willing to do this for 6 weeks at a time for all these specific things. And in 1994, somebody who's going to teach computer programming to middle schoolers is going to be somebody a little bit more mm-hmm. like Mr. Trout, I feel like. There's not a lot of people that are going to have a ton of like child experience and know enough about computer programming.
Right.
But I think that that's part of the problem. Like, I don't think it's mean of Jesse. I think that it wasn't appropriate. And think about, like, if he was the only sixth grade teacher that wasn't represented in the Follies, that's also mean in a different way. Like, they could have picked something else to make fun of, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's the part that, Jesse's uh-huh. thinking of. And they didn't know him very well. So
right. Well, he's also not a regular teacher. He's the short takes temporary person. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah. Fair enough. I think it was interesting to me that Jesse was so worried about it in a way that, like, I thought it was a good cross section of sixth grade, that some kids were just like, yeah, amazing, hilarious. And other kids were like a little bit more shy about it, and that Jesse was worried.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she would really be as worried because it was so normalized and because all the adults are telling her over and over again, it's fine. Mm-hmm. So I found it a little bit unusual that she remained so worried about it, such that she wrote the letter at the end. Mm-hmm. Because she was running, she ran it by Mr. Kingsbridge. She ran it by her family, including Aunt Cecilia. And like pretty much everybody was like, not everyone should work with kids. Not everyone should.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but there's the whole, I think the book made it kind of clear that's because she's Black and that she felt like she was, kind of ostracized or treated differently because she looked different, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's kind of the...
It's interesting. I wanted them to draw that parallel. I wanted him, Loran, just to draw that parallel more. I think mm-hmm. they dealt with race a bunch in the beginning and like mm-hmm. she has this other... we've got a couple other kids that actually are not white that mm-hmm. they mentions that have shown up out of nowhere at Stony Brook Middle School. But it didn't, I felt like that was kind of subtle for a baby. Mm-hmm.
Book. Well, she talks about how the one kid wouldn't go to her house because her parents were like.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But well, that's interesting.
Draws that parallel. Do you
right.
know
what I mean? Like, but I do that. But I think maybe it's because I'm Asian that like I drew that parallel of like, And, but I think honestly, it is like, I think it's the idea of being picked on for something that you can't help that kind of like struck a nerve with me. Cause I was like, well, like, would you make fun of someone if they were fat or if they were like, like any other of these physical things? Like, it just seems a little bit,
Oh, I totally agree with you. I'm saying I wish, and I also picked up on that, but I wish that they, underscored it a little bit more for the 9-year-olds that read this book.
Because
I don't think that message was clear.
Yeah.
Because I think making fun of the Dolly's big boobs, whether they're fake or not, there were some other physical things for other teachers. Like, I agree with you that would have been a great message had this book written it that way.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't think that I don't think she actually says that. I don't think that she makes that clear. And I think as a 9-year old, that would not have hit me.
Right. That's weird. That was my conclusion of why she felt bad.
Yeah. I wanted more of it. I wanted more of a we should make fun of the teachers for their personality quirks and not their physical appearance or not the things they can't help. I just wanted that to make more sense, to be more obvious.
Right.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I think that, but it was,
and the kids do a good job of that.
Yeah. The kids do a good job of which? Sorry.
Like making fun of the babysitter's personality quirks.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Jessie walking on her toes everywhere.
And no, there wasn't Claudia wasn't pulling their eyes back.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had almonds taped to her.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, and especially if that's part of why she's thinking that, then I wanted her Black parents to talk to her about that. Do you know what I mean? That would have been a much better book. Just highlighted a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. Peter Lorraine just was like, I can't go there. Probably as a.
Yeah. Although I think he went there more than other people do in Jessie books. I liked at the beginning when people were talking to Jessie and Sanjita Batts, the Puerto Rican girl, and they said they want a cross section of the school in the play. And Jessie immediately knew what that meant. He underscores a few things that I was surprised to see, because I feel we haven't had a Jessie book that directly deals with race in a while. So I feel like he could have brought it home and he didn't. So that's all. I thought it was an interesting kind of lesson about figuring out where those lines are. And I think that's also why it's a good project for our sixth graders, because I think figuring out how do you mock somebody a little to show appreciation without
veering into the fun.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because that's an important line to learn in life. Right. And so theoretically, the Dollies are there to help them with that. But it sounds like all the teachers felt kind of rejected by Mr. Trout. And so they sort of ran out of empathy for him as well. But definitely, there's a lot of people that shouldn't work with kids. I don't have the temperament to do it. And I mean, as part of my job, I sometimes have to tell people that, because in psychiatry training, I'm a psychologist, but in psychiatry training, they do an adult residency first. And then people who are interested can go on and do a child and adolescent residency. And there are some adult psychiatry trainees who want to work with kids. And then I see them interact with kids. And it's there's only so much you can learn about that. So, yeah. I think it's fair. And I think what you said was really astute, Emily, is that he was biding time, I'll just teach in between undergrad and grad school. That's a thing to do while I figure out the rest of my life. And it's oh no, this is actually a profession that has a lot of skills required. And I really liked the substitute teacher, Mr. Benefato, Peter Lorraine just demonstrated in 3 pages that he could set the tone and be strict, but also be nice and also be a good teacher and be someone that the kids could respect, but also be warm. And that it doesn't have to be, no classroom management at all, like Mr. Trout or, Viola Swamp, that there's a lot of in between. So I thought that he was a nice character.
Yeah. And he's I'm just being me. I'm just being strict because you guys are already out of pocket.
I don't need to be like this, but I'm going to have to send a couple of you to the principal's office because it's wild and out in here.
Yeah.
Totally.
Totally.
Oh, man. So that's my corner. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun little book.
I don't know. There was something a little off about it for me, but I just have some nuggets. One of the first things I wrote down was the cross-section comment, which is kind of interesting because it's the early 90s still. So it's in this, you know, kind of vague, neutral multiculturalism is good thing. But cross-section is funny, a funny term in particular, given how in this moment, too, is when people start from the social justice perspective, start talking about intersectionality, which is not, right, marking on the kind of dual oppression of being kind of, or the multiple nature of being oppressed on kind of different vectors at the same time. And that cross-section, talking to two, you know, Black and brown students about a cross-section of the population is not capturing, is not a social justice claim, right? It's a guard against against a discrimination claim a little bit. So kind of, right? Like, should they come to stand in for the cross-section because they're worried about, you know, their absence, what that says on about the school. Yeah. It's a funny kind of comment.
Yeah, for sure.
I was really preoccupied with the recurring mocking of the speech impediment. I don't have anything like interesting or smart to say about that, but like the R's as W's is so like, it's also a little, I don't know, almost like infantilizing. I don't, you know, like that. Say, I imagine them doing kind of like baby voices mocking him. And I was like, what is this? Like, I don't know. What are they doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to that, like, they don't know other things about him part, right? And so, but also, like, his name is Trout. Like, I get it. Like,
wow.
Yeah. Trout. Yeah. I know. It is, Anne said Elmer Fudd earlier. There's that. We had a high school teacher who had that speech impediment. And kids definitely made fun of it, but not to her face.
Yeah. That just feels so audacious to me. I can't. Yeah. I have a hard time imagining that the whole class of kids would be totally fine doing that to his face. I don't know. I guess I found that a little unbelievable.
Yeah, that's fair. And they're also only 11. Like, it's one thing to do it in the Follies. It's another thing to, like,
do it every day in class. Yeah.
They're just very aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel.
I also, maybe we're still in Esme's corner, actually. But, like, I also find it a little implausible that, like, they almost seem to be kind of emboldened by, or like mad that he's not reacting, right? That they're like, they take it personally as like a challenge to kind of like get a rise out of him. It almost feels like vindictive.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't, and like, are 11-year-olds really that vindictive?
So I didn't view it as vindictive. I viewed it as like testing the boundaries. So they're,
they're pretty bitchy. Like, you're planning the pranks. They're like, what's this guy going to do? He doesn't even have the balls to say anything, you know?
Well,
like,
which is a little bit, I mean, so thinking more broadly about kids and boundaries and limits, like, that's a little scary to kids when adults are not, like, holding any lines. And so a natural response is often like, okay, well, where is the line? When will we send someone to the principal's office? Like, when, like, if all the other teachers are holding, like, relatively clear boundaries and you know how you get in trouble in, you know, Mr. So-and-so's class, but you don't understand where the lines are in Mr. Trout's class, then trying to figure that out is a pretty common thing. It's like just boundary testing.
Yeah.
What if we take a pole and attach a fish hook to it? Will that do it?
Maybe then he'll finally yell at us.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I do think it's an interesting, like, kids, you know, kids would deny this directly if you ask them. But I think often it is like a, doesn't he care? Like, doesn't he want us to learn? Doesn't he want us to pay attention? Like, why is this still happening? So that's a part of it.
I don't know. Okay. Sure. Hold on, I want to find this place in the book that I marked, but let me scan. So this is just one other, like, a super random small thing, but in the very beginning, they're talking about, where is this page 11? She's talking about nose rings.
I knew it.
Where is it? What page is it on?
It's still in chapter one.
In chapter one? Yeah. Who is she talking about?
They're just talking about it, like, as it's on chapter 10. It's on page 10. She's talking, the girls are talking about it.
It's Claudia and Claudia for sitting Guinea.
You might want one. Yeah.
All I said, Claude wants to have her nose pierced. I didn't say I wanted to. I said, nose jewelry looks cool. If you want to look like Elsie the cow, then it's like you get the side of your nose pierced, not the middle. I thought that was so funny because the middle piercing is so popular right now. And it's like not a punk thing. It's like a cute thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, I could totally see Claudia with her nose pierced.
Yeah.
But then doesn't Jesse say something after that?
Or did she say that African styles take a while to catch on?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, Jesse. Like, a funny version of that teaching moment.
Yeah.
Right.
But interesting to not, like, I don't know. She could have, if she knew that, right, she could have been like, oh, what are you trying to say about the cow? Such a parallel. Like, guys, this is yikes. Don't say that in mixed company. You know what I mean? Like,
guys, this is yikes. How often do you guys think Jesse has to say, guys, this is yikes, to the rest of the BSE?
I mean,
realistically, a lot.
I think so, yeah. But this is a really glaring missed opportunity for a yikes moment with her.
Yeah.
Well, it says that they're discussing it. We don't get the rest of the discussion. Mm-hmm. But it says the rest of us began walking home discussing nose jewelry. I think it's great, but let's face it, it takes a while for some African styles to catch on. Mm-hmm. Connie was really the only other one who liked the idea. Stacey admitted it looked okay, but only on other people.
So funny.
Yeah, Christy was like, ugh, gross.
Yeah. And Jesse could have been like, wow, Christy, that's revealing.
Yeah. Yikes, Christy. We don't have any yikes corner in our podcast.
Yikes. Yeah. Some of the things, I didn't really drop much else down. So some of the, like, I thought the kids acted kind of weird when they were planning the thing. Do you believe that they would be able to keep it that secret? I feel like usually when the Chargers are trying to plan a surprise for the babysitters, like, there's a little more hijinks. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the like 8 and 9 year olds mostly, right? So that's older. I think they could do it. I think where the leaks often happen is when they like include Claire.
Right. You know,
like
make her play softball.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it would be doable. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that you might like, Emily, her describing, Stony Brook as part suburban, part rural, and part ritzy.
Yeah.
And I don't. True. Yeah. And we've got all those parts of town and we've heard about them before, but I don't think any of them have like laid out the socioeconomic strata so clearly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, in some ways, Jesse seems very savvy, and in other ways, she seems very 11.
Which is probably appropriate for a Black 11-year-old in white suburban Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Sort of rural, sort of ritzy.
Yeah.
I think ritzy is a funny choice, too. Like, is that supposed to be, like, a euphemism for the, like, hoity-toity wealthy side of town? Or, like, is it a neutral description?
Oh, I think it's hoity-toity.
I think so, too.
Yeah. You're saying, Emily, did she mean it just as like, that just means this part is fancier?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Or does she mean it as like a eyebrow raise to the...
I think she means it with an eyebrow raise.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how I envisioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I heard it when I read it to myself. Yeah. A little ritzy with like an eye roll. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wink on a roll. Yeah. We were talking about this a little bit before we signed on, but Emily, I was wondering if you like in that first chapter was very rich. Like there's a rich text of the first chapter, which I feel like we didn't get the rest of it played out as well as I wanted it to be. But there, Jesse was. This is before we know that Mr. Trout is not very good, right? We just know that she's in this class, and she says yawn about computer programming. She said, give me an hour of dance warm-ups anytime, because she was trying to like do this metaphor between computer programming and a dance show. Behind a computer program is a bunch of gobbledygook, and that's what this class is about, is the gobbledygook. And I get it, like you said, well, Mr. Trout's not a good teacher and that's why the program is gobbledygook. But I do think there were a lot of messages around this time in the early to mid 90s about girls and STEM stuff that we're still sort of trying to counter. And I remember
my math teacher trying to recruit me into a computer programming class and having a very similar reaction. Like, no, I don't want to do that. Thank you.
That's I don't want to learn that gobbledygook.
No, I don't want to learn that gobbledygook. But this is also
a dance class.
Yeah. Yeah. You know me. I'm just too much of a dancer. But this was only a couple years after that infamous Teen Talk Barbie that said, math class is tough, and people got really upset about it. And there were like a lot of pop culture messages about girls not liking math and computer stuff. And so that just stuck out to me a little bit, especially this book is written by a man. And Jesse's just like, bleh. Like, I know we get the counterweight of Stacey all the time talking about how much she loves math, which is also great in a lot of different ways. But I was like, does she need to, like, she doesn't need to say yawn about the computer programming. She could just have this program class and then we can learn about why Mr. Trout sucks.
Yeah.
I might be too much into it, but I was a little bit like, oh, why'd she have to say that, right? And I'm like,
I mean, I think if they had had a conversation about it at a meeting or Jesse was like, wow, this class is so boring. I can't believe I have to do computer programming. And then Stacy says, you know, like, wow, you know, it's probably just, you're probably just have a bad teacher, right? Like, this is actually a really interesting subject. Like, that might have been a little more.
Yeah. So smart. Yeah. Because obviously not all seven girls are going to think it's all amazing. Like, they're different and they have different personalities and different interests. Like, that's fine. But I
think that does come across, though, just in like the juxtaposition of the new teacher.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been a cool way to have the girls work that out. But like, I think we get the effect is the problem wasn't that like math is boring and girls like shouldn't pay attention in computer programming class. The point was that she had a bad teacher. I think that's the takeaway.
Yeah.
So. Once we get to- I wasn't as worried about the yawn because I think it corrects in the later.
Yeah.
But it could have been cool to have the girls talk about that.
Yeah.
And like have Stacy get all dorky about computer programming.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be really fun, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You should write a Babysitter's Club book, Emily.
Nah. Nah. Nah.
All right, you got anything else?
No.
All right, Anne.
Just a no.
No. That's it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of just like, you know, pop culture references due to the entertainment aspect of the book. Again, I think it's funny how, you know, I guess Peter Laurentis is the best at pop culture references, but it's also just mixed in with like old shit. So it's like, it's kind of funny to imagine a 11-year-old being like making like a Jerry Lewis like reference. I was like, but then also like Coneheads. I was like, okay, like this is not
all over the map.
It's like all over the place, you know?
I do. So I have two thoughts on that. One is I would not be surprised if Anna Martin's Detailed Outlines reference Jerry Lewis somewhere in there.
Thank God.
The chokehold that the boomers had on us as
it's true.
Where we were just like getting their culture shoved down our little gullets. It was like very present.
Yeah. I mean, you know? I think like I Love Lucy is fine, but like Jeremy Bellion is awesome. A lot. Like that, he never resonated with me as a child.
No.
Did he with you?
No, but I did know who he was.
Yeah, but I just know he was just like, I guess, goofy, and he kind of scared me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Emily, do you have any association with Jerry Lewis?
Nope, none.
Do you know who Jerry Lewis is?
Nope.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was like a Wayne's World, a kid does a Wayne's World skit, which I was like, what? Did he talk about it? Could be anything. He probably would just like swing,
yeah,
and well, like that.
Top 10 list.
Coneheads, another SNL spinoff movie.
I mean, we did a Wayne's World thing when we were in middle school.
We sure did.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what was it?
It was the history of rock and roll.
Oh my God.
For History Day, which is like a, you know,
and
statewide.
Was Wayne and Michelle was Garth.
Yeah.
And I was just the cameraman.
You were the director.
I was the director.
Director credit.
My director credit.
So funny.
Yeah. And Michelle's older brother helped us rank the top 10 bands of all time. And I remember he was very, what was our number? It was like Led Zeppelin probably or something. But I think that was Andy's, Michelle Serrato's contribution.
Yeah.
Because I think we're like Guns N' Roses. He's like, no, it's like Led Zeppelin.
I think we put that Beatles as number one, but I think it was number two that we were having a lot of
debate over.
Yeah. I just dropped off a bunch of old small video cassettes from my parents' house to have them converted to
digital. Oh, geez.
I think that is in there somewhere. So I'll, you know, well, maybe we can throw that up on Pinterest.
Yeah, get Michelle's permission.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Pay me to not put it up there.
Yeah. I also thought it was funny how much Jesse talked about how bad she is at singing. So much emphasis put on how bad of a singer she is.
No, she must be really bad.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, Jason is weird. It's like, I didn't get the lead in Peter Pan, and the only thing I could possibly think of is that I'm a horrible singer. I was like, you took a little bit of a leap there, my dude.
I know. I agree.
But not as big of a leap as she would have taken if she had gotten the Peter Pan.
Aha.
I agree with Emily that I feel like this book seemed a little bit unhinged. Like, all the characters seem a little bit unhinged. It's like... We entered a slight bizarro role of the Babysitter's Club. Not like full on, like a super special, but just like a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like
super special adjacent.
Yeah. I feel like maybe Peter smoked a joint before writing this. And it just like, he was like stoned or something.
Wait, what's the DM on Instagram and ask him?
Yeah.
What's the astrology thing that everyone says makes people all crazy? Oh, this is like, yeah, this book took place during retrograde.
Yeah. Like, even I feel like Claudia seems weird too.
There's a full moon.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they're all in their periods.
But anyway, one more bone about the nose piercing thing I just remembered. Christy says it's permanent and that's why Claudia shouldn't do it. And I'm like, well, it's not. Like,
yeah, it's
if you
not
take
permanent.
Jewelry out, it grows back. Okay, I'm done.
Like,
research tonics.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it was okay. So, like, this is like after the show, we all made our way to the cafeteria. The entire BSC was waiting there. Every single one of them mobbed me except one. Claudia was mobbing the ice cream.
Unhinged.
Unhinged. What does mobbing the ice cream mean anyway? Like, it sounds like she just has like
a line.
Dived into like a sundae or something, or
it's all over her face.
Yeah. Well, it was just like everywhere. Oh, there was like an unhinged Flintstones moment with Logan.
Oh, yeah.
Where they like all start shouting yabba dabba doo. Like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. A lot of jokes. Yeah.
A lot of jokes.
A lot of jokes.
Oh, yeah. The question about the licorice that Claudia gave Jesse to help her.
Oh, yeah. Cough. What the fuck was that?
What the hell was that?
Yeah. Magic tiny black candies.
Like, what?
Yeah. I don't know. I thought you would know, Anne. You don't know what that is? I was like, Anne's got to tell us what that is.
I mean, black licorice can be, the taste can be off-putting, I suppose. If you've never had it before.
But I think it's supposed to be, no, she says that she breathes, she has licorice breath afterwards, but I think it's supposed to be like a fisherman's throat lozenge or something like that.
But she said they were really tiny.
Yeah, that's part I didn't get.
It's special candy guaranteed to clear your throat, and they were teeny black pellets.
I don't know.
Listeners, help us out.
Yeah, if anyone knows what these tiny black pellets are that kind of smell like licorice. Licorice tipped sabers.
So weird. So unchanged.
What the hell's going on? Yeah. Oh, I also like how they named the Pikes the seven dwarves. Oh, the seven terrors. Chaos, disaster, ruckus, racket, pandemonium, turmoil, and noise.
That was what I wrote down for a funny line.
Yeah.
So it's a little long, but
wait, hold please. I just found something called Nippets Licorice Pellets.
Ew.
It says from English company Simpkins and Company Limited, established 1921, and around it says clarifies the voice and clears the throat.
Sounds like That's what Claudia has in her backpack for some reason.
Yeah. And they're like weird little, I'm going to send you guys this.
Oh, I can send it to you, Emily. I can order it on Amazon and I can send you one.
Oh, you can still buy them?
You can still buy them. I just sent you guys the link. This must be what she's talking about.
Let me see. Nippets.
Oh, yeah. That's got to be it.
Yep.
Weird, right?
Yeah. The reviews. Huh? Love Sensen, but it's not meat anymore. This is the closest thing to it.
Oh, is this a Sensen reference?
What's Sensen?
They talk about it in The Music Man.
Yeah.
It's breath mints.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, I was hoping they tasted like Sensen, but they don't. Flavor is similar to Sensen. What the hell is Sensen?
Okay. Yeah, Sensen here. I got a thing about Sensen. It's discontinued. But yeah, Sensen is a cover up your telltale breath with Sensen. That's in trouble from The Music Man. But yeah, it was called Breath Perfume, and it's also little tiny black nuggets.
Weird. But why is it not around anymore?
The company.
Was there like meth in it or something?
No, there wasn't meth in it. No, because nobody eats it anymore. Oh, it's from a Japanese word meaning glistening, shiny, or bright. Oh, but there's no documentation to indicate any connection between these meanings.
Weird.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, what is this website, oldtimecandy.com?
Yeah. I'm ordered birthday presents for Anne from there. We did a giveaway from there once too for the podcast.
Wait, I'm so okay. So it's this thing. So it's Nippets.
Yeah, or Sensen, because Sensen was still made in the 90s, I think.
Weird. Mm-hmm. It's permanently discontinued.
No, there's lots of news that don't exist anymore.
I have to get to the bottom of this. It's a mystery.
This is a mystery.
Yeah, I guess if there's time, I was going to talk a little bit about nerd culture, because Mr. Trout is obviously with the Pocket Protector and the toupee, a classic nerd, as portrayed by 80s movies like Revenge of the Nerds, that kind of thing. But interestingly, I've been having a debate in recent times over exactly what is a nerd.
Yeah, people disagree.
There's a lot of definitions now.
Micah said that he's like, you were definitely like seen as a nerd in high school. And I was like, I don't think I was.
No, you weren't.
No. And thank you. I feel like you should text Micah after this podcast and tell him that. And he was like, come on, marching band, that's a nerd. And I was like, well, I guess so. But I still don't think I was seen as a nerd.
Yeah.
But is it, I was like, I feel like we're all nerds, the three of us, but I think it's like a nerd is more classified as your interests and, you know, and like how much knowledge you like to consume about particular things.
We like to play, are you a nerdy, cool person or a cool nerd?
No.
Oh.
Nice.
Okay. Come on.
I think I'm a nerdy, cool person. And Matt's a cool nerd, I think.
What's the difference?
Let's see. I mean, it's like, which one's the core and which one's the modifier?
Oh, I see.
So, like, I'm cool at my core, but I have some nerdy tendencies that modify my coolness, you know?
Yeah. Lady.
Cool person also.
Yeah.
Cool nerd.
Yeah.
Very obviously.
Mm-hmm. I like this game.
Isn't it fun?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we do all the babysitters?
Okay. Christy is a cool nerd. Marianne's a cool nerd. Stacy and Claudia are nerdy, cool people. Jesse is too. Mal's a nerd. Yeah, she's not cool at all.
And Dawn is also a nerdy, cool person.
Yeah.
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 Done. Shannon is a nerdy, cool person.
Yeah.
And so's Logan.
Yeah.
Oh, so we're the same as Logan?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, we have talked a lot about how much affinity you and I have with the 12-year-old boy, 13-year-old boys in these books. We think that tracks.
Fine.
But you're right. Mr. Trout is like the classic, like mid, Rick Moranis in the 80s kind of nerd for sure.
Right.
But I, as a cool nerd, I have had lots of nerdy people tell me that I like should lose my nerd card because I don't care about technology or science fiction or fantasy. Like, I don't like.
Yeah, but you care a lot about Swatch watches.
Yeah, it's not nerdy.
and Converse.
And
also classically punk rock. Don't even
rainbows.
I know. There's a whole, I feel like there's also a whole punk nerd crossover for sure.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Okay. Claudia's candies. Besides the nippets, which is who, Lord knows why she's carrying those around in her backpack. Seriously.
So,
there wasn't that much candy she had on hand. She didn't really, like, in the Babysitter's Club meetings.
They did have baked chips.
Yes, I had that too. They're healthy. They're baked. Baked tortilla chips. Those are not good. They're not good.
Those. They're gross.
Yeah. And not good. So, yeah. That's all we got for Claudia.
Right. Not a lot of tallies. Just one almond. Back again.
Just one almond?
One almond.
Yeah.
Or just like one eye? One eye.
Like an almond. And then one shy and one sensitive. That's it.
Okay. I feel like there were a lot of weird lines, but not like the right kind of weird.
Yeah.
Totally. I really liked the one that Anne just read about the Pike kids being the, what is it again?
Say it again.
Oh, the seven terrors.
Seven terrors. Yeah. I'm like picturing them having the gravity of like the seven deadly sins.
Nice. Yeah.
But, I don't know if that really makes for a good title, though.
Yeah. I put down how Jesse described what the Kishis want Claudia to eat and read because she used capital letters.
Yeah.
Some foods and great literature.
That's funny. Yeah. Some foods and great literature, like in all caps.
Yeah.
I just had one of like Trout's like wigglest review. Just because I thought it would fit well with the title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what's with you?
Yeah. Yep. All right, Ed, what do you think?
I don't know. I could do either of those.
Mm-hmm. What was yours again, Esme? It was
wholesome foods and great literature.
That's kind of funny because it doesn't have anything to do with a bank.
Okay, we can just go with that one then.
Okay.
Great. Nice.
I also put the baked chips under the social justice wash because it was definitely some like diet culture, fat phobia stuff. Because Claudia's like,
no. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Have they eaten, remember snack walls?
Oh, don't even get me started. Yes. Although I'll admit, I actually liked them, but you know.
Same.
Pizza toast. What do you guys want a pizza toast to? In this bomb of like bomb in a good way, this super bomb chapter one, mine is a sincere one, but we can do something else. I loved the little scene of all the Ramses when everybody gets home from work and school with Squirt running to Becca and Jesse and everybody. And then their dad gets home and he runs over there and they're all like rolling and playing in the yard. I thought it was very sweet. I was like, oh, I like we get to spend this time with Jesse's family. That's my offer.
Guys, pizza toast to the Ramses being cute. That works for me.
Sure.
Wow.
That was easy. Wow.
Sarcastic quip from Anne.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in there. They're in my head. But I'm not going to sound like a horrible person. Poo-poo that.
You want Bayou? What? You want a joke, Anne? Instead of this loving, strong Black family, you want a joke?
Okay. Wow.
All right.
It's turned.
To the pizza toast to the Ramses being cute.
To the Ramses. Pizza toast to the Ramses. This episode of Stuck in Stony Brook is now adjourned.
Thank you to Anna and Martin for everything. This episode of Stuck in Stony Brook is edited by Salar Khan. You can find her work and hire her at propodcastediting.net. Theme song written and recorded by Gary Schaller, performed by the band Kid Kit. You can follow us on Instagram at Stuck in Stony Brook or find us on our website, stuckinstonybrook.com. You can also join us on Patreon for bonus content at patreon.com/stuckinstonybrook. Need some books that we mentioned? Buy them from our bookshop and support both a local independent bookstore and your favorite series literature analysis podcast. Find us at bookshop.org/shop/stuckinstonybrook. Lastly, if you're feeling dibbly generous and you want to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that would be super helpful. You're the best friends a girl could ask for.